Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the continuously updated huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. Huntrealestate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA here in Buffalo, Niagara, also all the way across upstate, and even through our links to Phoenix, Arizona, and Boston, Massachusetts. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage and MLS number 37405. Hunt Mortgage is an equal opportunity lender, and you can reach them at 633-3700. And when you do, ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing costs for your particular home financing needs and wants, and that's our guarantee. Also, ask about our many exclusive programs, including our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash. In today's very, very competitive market, you want to make sure that your offer, when you find the house you want, is as competitive as possible, and the most competitive you can be is with cash, with no contingencies, obviously. But the fact of life is that not many people have all cash to buy a home today where the average sale price is continuously moving upward. In that environment, the next best thing is to have a mortgage commitment. But most banks will only loan you money, give you that commitment when you have a house selected. At Hunt Mortgage, we're different. We'll give you a mortgage commitment without the house. We call it a pre-purchase commitment, and all you have to do is find the house, and then we appraise the house and make sure that the collateral is appropriate for what you want to do, and you're all set to go. Call them today, 633-3700, for a personalized, customized service that will knock your socks off. And don't forget about the first ever 24/7, 365 real estate hotline, the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property that's listed for sale here in Buffalo, Niagara, in any of the markets we serve as well. Our local number here is 716-631-4800. And then just enter the street number, house you want to know about. No matter whose listing it is, and the hotline will prompt you with a choice of street names. Select the one you want. You'll hear a brief description, and then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that property. It's all automatic, just that fast, anytime in any market we serve on any listing, whether it's ours or any of the brokers. And you'll drive by a sign today, and you'll see all kinds of stuff on it, QR codes, 14 phone numbers, websites, pictures, and, you know, it's very confusing. And then you have to stop and maybe take a picture of yourself and try to figure out who's can give you the best information. Just to remember that number, 631-4800, no matter whose listing it is, you'll get all the information you need at your fingertips very, very quickly. Hunt is the official real estate and relocation provider for our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Sabres, and the Rochester Americans. Tough couple days for the Sabres, but we've got probably our biggest day in the last 25 years for the Buffalo Bills tonight at Bills Stadium, and we're looking forward to being in that game and also winning, which will be a great thing for our whole community. We are broadcast live on WBEN 930 AM, and if you want to participate in today's show, reach us here in the studio by calling us at 803-0930 or 1-800-616-9236 if you're long distance, or star 930 if you're mobile. Those are all free calls. And if you want to text us, you can text us at that same number, 803-0930. We have a very special show for you today. In the past, we've taken a look at our educational institutions around town to see what really they do to contribute to our entire environment. We consider ourselves, a lot of us do anyway, that this is a college town. And we have my guest today, a very special guest, who is the president of Damon College, Dr. Gary Olson. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning, Peter.
It's good to have you back. We missed you last time, and Mike Brogan came in and was a very eloquent spokesman for Damon College. But take us back in time a little bit, Gary. You're not from Buffalo. How did you get here?
I'm just starting my ninth year here at Damon. I came here from Idaho State University, where I was the vice president and provost. I was there for 5 years. Before that, I was dean of arts and sciences at Idaho State University, and then I spent 20 years before that at the University of South Florida in Tampa.
Very interesting. And you, you've been here in for those 9 years. What would you say, how would you describe the major changes that have taken place on Damon's campus since you got there?
Oh, it's quite significant. In the same way that it's said that Buffalo itself is undergoing a kind of renaissance and a rebuilding and, you know, reclaiming the waterfront and so on, Damon has really been undergoing a similar if not smaller, renaissance on its campus, both the physical campus, which has grown, I think, by something like 30% in those 9 years, and just in this kind of sophistication of our offerings on the academic side and just about every way, really. We're the only Division II, NCAA Division II school. Well, let me rephrase that. Until just this year, we were the only Division II athletics department in the region. We were just joined by one other school. But all of that's happened in the 9 years.
That's very interesting. One of the things that we've talked about in the past, and also we talked about with with Mike, was the impact that a college has on any community. What is the economic impact? Can you measure the economic impact of Damon College on the community here?
Yeah, it's measured every few years by the Commission of Independent Colleges and Universities. That's an association of all the independents in New York, and they issue a report. If I'm not mistaken, the most recent one said that the impact of Damon on the local community is about $33 million a year. Now, that's obviously not the kind of impact that a big university like UB would have, but it's not insignificant either. We supply lots of jobs. I mean, I think we have about, if you take a both full and part-time, we have about 600 employees. We have something like 2,600 students. So, you know, that's a lot of personnel and students, and those are people that also buy things in the community and are part of the community. And, they're a highly educated workforce, which is good for any area. So I think Damon, just by its very existence, adds quite a bit to the community.
Of those 2,700 students, how many are resident and how many are commuters, and how much of an how has that changed since you've been at Damon?
Well, it fluctuates, to be honest, from year to year. We do have students from pretty much half the states in the nation and a number of other nations. But that being said, you know, the lion's share of our students come from New York, but not just Buffalo. We have a lot of students from New York that come from New York City or the Rochester area and so on, actually all through the state. But there is a good chunk of our students here that are from Buffalo. We have a lot of students on campus. So we have a number of options for living on campus. I don't know what the current number is, but it's probably about a third of our students are resident on campus.
So the obvious question, I think, for anybody running an institution like yours is how has COVID-19 impacted your method of operation?
Well, you know, obviously, it's been a terrible tragedy that everybody's gone through, and nobody's really happy with what we're dealing with. But I do have to say, I'm extremely happy with how we handled it. Both I and a number of my senior staff have had Homeland Security training. And the one thing they drive into you is that you never wait for a crisis to start planning for it. That's the worst thing that you can do. You always have to plan ahead for a crisis. And we did. We could see it coming. We had an emergency response team set up. We were way ahead of the game all the way with each stage. So as New York started phasing into lockdown, we were way ahead of them. We knew what was going to happen. We knew we were ready. As a result, we were able to keep the infection rate. Remember, that's a lot of people. So 600 plus about 27. So 2,000 plus people. we were able to keep the infection rate to less than 0.5% on an average, which is absolutely amazing when you look at these high rates around around the country and right here in Erie County, 8%, 10%, you know, some states with 20%, and so on. And we were able to do that because we had a plan from the beginning with all the CDC measures and actually more. We stuck to it, and people complied, and it worked. It was really amazing.
How long were you shut down?
Well, you know, in a certain way, we actually weren't shut down because we are also an essential service because a number of our residential students, this is their only place that they live here. You know, we can't just kick them out of the dormitory. So a good part of the college was actually operating in person, but the rest of us were operating remotely, you know, Zoom and so on, telephone. So we didn't stop operations. We just shifted operations. So part of that planning, by the way, had to do with shifting the moving on a dime, shifting the whole faculty and curriculum to remote within a two-week period. And, you know, everybody stepped up. They did it. They had the plan in advance. They knew it was probably going to happen. And when we had to, it may be painful. It may have been painful for people who had never taught before any online courses, but we had a lot of support for them, and they did fabulously. So in a certain way, we never really shut down. We just shifted how we do things.
So did you finish the second semester of 2020?
Yes, absolutely.
So did you go remote? Is that what happened? For the most
part. Yeah, well, when the full lockdown came down from Albany, as I said, we were ready. We immediately shifted. We continued the courses. Everything went on without pause. And one of the other things, by the way, a lot of people don't know this. You probably read in the newspaper, even here locally, lots of colleges had multiple furloughs and layoffs, and some were permanent layoffs. Of faculty and staff, we made a commitment to our faculty and staff that from the beginning that we were going to do everything we could from the beginning to keep everyone on the payroll until it was absolutely possible. And you know, we did. We did not have one furlough or layoff due to the pandemic. You know, we just sort of shifted how people did their work. And we tried to be as flexible as possible. And, you know, some people even on the side said to me, what are you thinking? You could use this crisis and, you know, furlough a bunch of people for the time being to save a lot of money. But, you know, it's corny, but we talk about the Damon family. We think of all of us together as a family. We don't always agree with one another, but, you know, there's a sense of we all want each other to succeed. And our thought was, well, you know, families don't do that to each other. They try to support each other through a crisis. And that's what we did. I'm really proud of it.
Well, you should be, because obviously many institutions, not just educational institutions, used the pandemic as an opportunity to cut costs in any way, shape, or form. Some because they had to, because there was simply no business. And regarding your institution, I'm sure they must have had to deal with families that were questioning if remote learning was the same value or the same price, let's say, of on-campus learning. And did you deal with that, or how did you deal with that?
You know, there were a few that suggested that, and I know there was some dissent around the country along those lines. It wasn't widespread at Damon. You know, we have a very skillful faculty. They really know what they're doing. And although there were some faculty that had not taught online before, they did a great job. And we gave them lots of sort of instructional kinds of, you know, support and how to do this well. And I think that worked out. So No, there were no refunds or anything because they got the same quality that, or at least a high quality, let's say, of instruction. And after all, a good part of the semester was not remote. It was in person. It's just part of it wasn't.
And did you go back to on campus, somewhat normal classroom activity in the fall?
Yeah, well, we're, yes. And we're, we did, and it worked out well. Now it's not the exact same as it was before because a lot of the courses decided, well, you know, we could do this in what's called a hybrid fashion, meaning that you have a course and some of the course material is done online and some is done in person, depending on, you know, the day and what, you know, what you're covering. You know, not everything has to be sitting in a classroom. But we also changed a lot of things on campus. So even for the on campus part, you know, there is a lot of social distancing. Everybody has to wear a mask. One of the things we did to deal with the safety issue, by the way, is we were the only college in the beginning, some were forced afterwards, to set up a system where coming back to campus, everyone had to get tested. We had our own testing, and no faculty and staff or student could return to campus without being tested and testing negative. And if you were found positive, we had a way to quarantine you for 14 days. And so this way, everybody, you know, we started from ground zero. Nobody began the semester without testing negative. Now, it's interesting, I was on, before all that, when we were in the summer, I was on a conference call meeting with a lot of the other presidents, and they were questioning each other, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? And everybody was saying, well, we're not going to do mandatory testing. We just don't have the way to do it. And besides, you know, you can test negative and somebody can still get it the next day. So they were all kind of laughing at us. And I said, yeah, but we start from ground zero. You don't know what you're starting from. We know everybody began the semester negative, and if they follow the rules and do the masks, which everybody did do to a person, and do all the other safety things, we can get through this semester with a very, very low rate. And that's what we did.
When you have a commuter population of X percent of your campus, doesn't it make a lot more difficult to how if a student lives in the city, for example, and commutes out to Amherst to your campus, how often are you testing to control for the fact that the people are wandering around the community? That's going to happen.
It is, and probably that less than half of 1% came from that kind of population, because what we did kind of create here on campus is a bubble. And we made it clear to people, we did a lot of educational stuff for everybody on how to stay safe. And we really stressed to the students, you know, it may be fun to go downtown and go to parties with, you know, students from other colleges and this and that, but you're going to get sick, you're going to bring it home, you're going to bring it into the campus, other people will get sick, you might bring it to your parents, this is not good. Let's try to create a bubble. And we did. The students were really good. I mean, not everybody was always perfect, but they did a very good job of that. Obviously, you can't control every individual and who sees and who or she doesn't. But by and large, they were pretty good, and I think the infection rate speaks for itself.
Did you have a situation at all, or did you see situations with your students where their families were impacted in terms of their employment, for example, and had to come back to you and say, you know, we'd like to continue at Damon, but we've got to do something about tuition because we just don't have the money that we used to have. There's no income.
Yeah, there was a little of that. I mean, even in the best of times, you know, families have issues of that sort, and we've always at Damon tried to be as helpful as possible. I mean, you know, we don't want to just turn somebody away and say, well, you can't pay your bills, get out of here. So we, you know, we work with families to try to figure out, okay, well, how can we all make this work? And a lot of times there is a way, you know, and there was a little of that this time, a little more of that this time because of the COVID. Now, it did help when we got the original federal relief funding because about half of that was earmarked to be used for students, which also means the family. And we were able to provide the students with the most need some relief. And we have the second bit of relief coming down the pipeline now. And I think there'll be an opportunity there, you know, because there are still some families that, you know, are without work and don't have an income and so on.
We have to go to break in a few seconds here, Gary. But when we come back from break, I'd like to explore with you the impact of a college or a university on the community around it and the greater community, more than just the financial economic impact, the direct economic impact you referred to earlier, but really the impact on our cultural life, the impact on as you pointed out, the intellectual power that a university or college brings to a community. And we'll be right back with more from Our House to Yours with Gary Olson after these very important messages.
Front Living, the West End, Buffalo's newest luxury townhome community, may be perfect for you. In the heart of the waterfront village, the West End offers picturesque Lake Erie views. Each three-bedroom unit is meticulously crafted with the highest quality materials and amenities. To view this landmark development from Simonelli Real Estate, schedule your private showing now with exclusive listing agent Deacon Tasker with Hunt Real Estate at 280-7787 or by visiting westendbuffalo.com.
Hunt has been serving your real estate services needs since 1911. In all that time, Hunt has never lost their commitment to this community, and nothing, including our current challenges, will change that commitment. Hunt will face the challenges as they always have with you, together. Through the power of state-of-the-art technology, they're able to remain open for business at Hunt Mortgage. Call 633-3700 and any of Hunt's mortgage professionals can assist you. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, NMLS 37405, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the continuously updated huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. Huntrealestate.com is the only place on the web where you can find a complete inventory of homes available, not just here in Buffalo, Niagara, but all across upstate, and even through our links to Boston, Massachusetts, and Phoenix, Arizona. You'll also find access to a complete set of home ownership services at huntrealestate.com, which is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, and if you'd like more information about our many exclusive programs, including the one that allows you to roll the cost of home improvements into your mortgage, effectively allowing you to buy the before but live the after, call 633-3700 and ask for details. And when you get them on the phone, ask about our Second Look program. Many of you have probably seen umpteen advertisements on television, online, everywhere else, for mortgage products, mortgage services, and you may even responded and filled out an application online and received some kind of qualification, pre-approval, or something resembling a commitment for somebody to loan you some money. You want to make sure that you're getting the best rate and best closing cost, most efficient process you possibly can. The only way to make sure of that is to have somebody else look at it. Our Second Look program does just that. We'll take a look at whatever you've received from any other lender, and we'll make sure that you're getting the very best deal possible in the marketplace today, and we may be even able to beat it. And if we can't beat it, we're going to give you a gift certificate anyway. So please call 633-3700 and ask for a Second Look. If you'd like to pick up the phone and just ask any question about real estate, call us at 633-9400. That's our customer service center, the only one of its kind in North America. We'll either answer your question right there on the phone, or we'll direct you to the appropriate professional for whatever it is you may need, whether you're considering buying or selling a home, financing a home, insuring a home, or even fixing up the one you have. And remember, our guarantee stands. We will sell your home, or ERA will buy it. That's the seller security plan, available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA professional. And I can assure you it's the best guarantee in the marketplace today. I'm live remote today with Dr. Gary Olson, who's the president of Damon College. We've been talking about bunch of stuff relative to the college itself and how it has dealt with the pandemic, as we all have to deal with it. One last question about that, Gary, before we turn to the impact of Damon on kind of the whole fabric of our life here in Western New York. What will you do, or how will you handle the vaccination process? Will you be a vaccination center for your students and faculty when that becomes available?
Boy, that's a good question, Peter. I think you have the SP. And I did not coach you on this. Yes, we
That's great.
Have applied to become an official vaccination center. We have the, we're known as Western New York's premier health sciences educator. So we have the personnel to do this and the resources. So we applied to the state, and the indications are that we're getting that approval. Now, if you read today's paper, there's been a bump in the road with in New York, the number of vaccines that the state was, I guess, shortchanged. So I don't know how that will affect us going forward. But right now, the plan is that we will be able to be an official center. We're very proud of that.
Well, I think it's a great move myself. And as you say, the strength of the health sciences at Damon certainly puts you in a great position to be able to provide that service. It seems to me, though, that there's got to be not just what happens at Damon for the campus community, but also there's got to be a certain spread of this vaccine, widespread of it, such that people start to feel comfortable again. And you know, we'll stop worrying. Do you see that? I mean, just as a citizen of our community, do you see that as any time frame in your mind when you see us kind of returning to some degree of normalcy? Let's say, even assuming that we're still wearing masks for a while.
Well, I know we'll come back to some degree of normalcy. Normal may look different when we're actually through the pandemic. I'm not sure the virus itself will completely ever go away, but I think the pandemic will subside. But you know, we've all learned something, a lot of things from this. To be honest about it, before the vaccine, some people would make fun of me, but I was a real believer in carrying around with me a little bottle of Purell. And, whenever you touch surfaces like a railing or, even the button in an elevator, there's always a chance of getting a cold or flu or, anything. And I knew that. All you have to know is a little bit about biology to know that. And quite frankly, when I started doing that, carrying that around with me on a daily, I stopped getting colds and flu. This is way before the pandemic. And so I was a great believer in being very vigilant about touching public surfaces, washing your hands, using Purell. Now, obviously, I didn't walk around with a mask. Before a pandemic, that seemed a little too much, although there are cultures that do that, Asian. Mm-hmm. But I think now more people understand how the transmission of not just COVID, but just everyday anything works. And I think there's going to be a level of vigilance that we did not have before. That may even translate into fewer colds and fewer flus in the general population, if I'm right. I think there'll be other things. One of the things I do as president is meet a lot of community members, meet a lot of politicians, possible donors, and so on. And so I'm shaking hands every single day. When we have commencement for our students, when they graduate, every single student walks across the stage and gets the diploma, and I shake hands with them. By the way, I always, even in the old days, had my bottle of Purell right there. So after that last student was off, I used extra. But shaking hands is you know, an everyday thing in what I do. Well, you know, as Dr. Fauci said, and a number of others, that's going to be a thing of the past. People are not going to shake hands in the way that we all did in the old days. In a certain way, that makes me sad because there's a kind of, you know, sense of trust and, you know, communal interaction that's kind of nice. But it's not a healthy thing. It never was. Because, you know, you don't know that you're in the process of catching a cold and you sneezed in your hand a little while ago and now you're shaking my hand or vice versa. And so, as Dr. Fauci said, that's likely to be something that's not done anymore. So the elbow bump and the fist bump and all these other replacements for that are more likely.
I think that's a real shame. I think it's a real change in our culture. And I heard Dr. Fauci say that, and I can't say I agree with him. And you describe yourself as feeling sad about that. I think I'm more than sad about that because I think it's a real change in society, and I don't think it's a welcome one for a lot of people. And you know, you also know from biology that your body needs a strong immune system, and Purell won't make you better all the time. It's a very temporary fix. Because the minute you touch something, the value of the Purell goes away, and so it's. I think we've got to. I don't know what society, how you feel about things right now, but it's. I think it's a very strange thing to watch anything on any of the cable channels or any place else, and watch a movie or a miniseries or something that where people are acting normally, and then you have to walk out in society, and it's nothing close to that. I think there's a general confusion out there about what the future is going to look like. And I'm not asking you to predict because I don't think any of us know. Let's shift gears if we can, Gary, for a second here, because I think hopefully as part of the return to normalcy, we're going to see things like the theater back on Damon campus. What's the status of your kind of cultural outreach to the community through Damon College?
Well, you know, when we began in 1947, then it was a Catholic college called Rosary Hill College, we were very strong in the arts, and we remain strong to this day. So we have, for example, a cutting-edge visual and performing arts center, and there are constantly changing exhibits of art there, of every different kind of art that you can imagine. You know, any college will also some have music. We no longer have a department of music as we did at one time, but other colleges will. And these are the kinds of things where a college really does enliven and enrich the community. And theater is another one. We have theater professors that are really fabulous, both doing things here at the college, but also out in the theater community doing things. We also have posted for many, many years, although this is scheduled to change in a few years, Musical Fair, which, as you know, is very well known around Western New York. They produce a number of professional musicals every year, and that brings a lot of people to our campus. And these are kinds of things that enrich the community that Damon is able to do. But, you know, I don't want to just put the emphasis on art either, because if you think about it, colleges like Damon really provide a lot even above and beyond that. We bring in lots of speakers, famous speakers, on any number of either intellectual or cultural things, and everything is open, subjects, I should have said, and everything is open to the public, and you know, we always advertise when that happens. And then, you know, there's also research that colleges like Damon do, where actual discoveries, whether the discovery is a cure for some, you know, some malady, or the discovery of a new device to make your life better on in whether it's a medical device or some other device. Our faculty are constantly doing research in their area, you know, whatever their areas are. And then if you're a college like Damon that is so strong in the health sciences, there's also another way to give back to the community. I mean, we have what's known as the best physical therapy department in the area, and the same with physician assistant. We have one of the best nursing. And all of these professionals are out in the world doing, they're not just on campus. They give clinics out, sometimes free clinics, usually in parts of Buffalo where people might not ordinarily have been able to afford to get a checkup, let's say, or, you know, to get some physical therapy, whatever. A lot of our nurses were frontline during the pandemic, you know, frontline heroes out there. In fact, some of the infections that we did get were from these first responders. Mm-hmm. So these are just a few of the kinds of ways that Damon and other colleges give back to a community.
I'd like to explore that a little bit more. We do have to go to a break. We'll be right back with more from our house to yours with Dr. Gary Olson after these very important messages.
Hunt has been serving your real estate services needs since 1911. In all that time, Hunt has never lost their commitment to this community, and nothing, including our current challenges, will change that commitment. Hunt will face the challenges as they always have with you, together. Through the power of state-of-the-art technology, they're able to remain open for business at Hunt Mortgage. Call 633-3700 and any of Hunt's mortgage professionals can assist you. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, NMLS 37405. New York Department of Financial Services and an equal opportunity lender.
Downsizing from your current home? Love the idea of waterfront living? The West End, Buffalo's newest luxury townhome community, may be perfect for you. In the heart of the waterfront village, the West End offers picturesque Lake Erie views. Each three-bedroom unit is meticulously crafted with the highest quality materials and amenities. To view this landmark development from Simonelli Real Estate, schedule your private showing now with exclusive listing agent Deacon Tasker with Hunt Real Estate at 280-7787 or by visiting westendbuffalo.com.
Welcome back to our house. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the ever-improving HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. And the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, home of the pre-purchase commitment, the low rate and closing cost guarantee, and our very unique second look program. Call them today, 633-3700. I'm live remote this morning with Dr. Gary Olson, the president of Damon College. We've been talking about, among other things, the response of the Damon College to the pandemic environment, and then really what the impact, even in that environment, of a college like Damon is on the community around it. Our mission on the show is to help people protect and enhance their investment in real estate, and one of the great things that I've seen, Dr. Olson, is how powerful the impact of really an organization like yours is on the values in a community. Centers of education, centers of art, tend to radiate value out around them. But before I ask you to comment on that, we have a couple of callers on the line. Our first caller is Gustav from Williamsville. Gustav, how can we help you?
Good morning. I guess along the same lines, I'm curious if Damon has a core curriculum, or does it have area distribution choices, and does it see its mission as growing citizenship, or is it more oriented toward vocational training?
Yeah, that's a great question. We have, as pretty much every college does, have a core curriculum, but it's not an old-fashioned kind of menu-driven thing. It's more of a values-oriented thing. We do see ourselves very specifically as helping to educate citizens for a better life out in the community, not as a workforce training institution. You know, that's fine for, you know, certain community colleges and so on, but Damon sees itself as, you know, educating people for the the whole world, really. And it's the it's back to the old from the classics, the old sense that education is about creating good citizens.
Does Damon still have its community service requirement?
Yes. You know, it's very interesting. In the college world, there's a thing called, I'm blanking on how we call it. Anyway, it's a linking of service learning is what they call it. It's a linking of community service to various courses so that while you're learning something in the course, you also have to do so many hours in the community. So, for example, if you're doing an English course, you might do some tutoring of underprivileged people, maybe adults who never learned how to read or write, and you help tutor them. Or if you're a healthcare worker, you might be helping to give these free clinics. And, or if you're a business student, you might be helping people that wouldn't have the ability to get this service. You may be helping them with their tax returns. So that's service learning. And Damon, you know, on any given year, basically gives 25 to 30,000 hours of service directly to people in the community. And the reason why we know this is that unlike a lot of colleges where, you know, there's a smattering of these kind of courses, actually to graduate from Damon, you have to do X number, I think it's 60 hours of service learning work before you graduate. And so everybody is doing it. And so that adds up. And it's a real benefit to the community, especially to certain areas in Buffalo that need it most.
I think that's critically important, and that's been going on for a long time at Damon, which I think is a great attribute of the school. We have another caller on the line, Gary. This is John from Rochester. John, how can we help you?
Hey, Peter. Hey, Gary. Gary, the impression I got from what I see in about Damon College is they're very fair as far as welcoming conservative speakers before their student body versus a lot of other universities that are the opposite. How do you promote that type of harmony with conservative speakers and liberal speakers?
Yeah, that's a good, that's a very good question. We've been open to that kind of thing all the time. For the longest time, I mean, we haven't done this particular program in a while, but for, oh, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, we had a Distinguished Leaders lecture service, series. And most of these people were politicians of one sort, and both national and regional. You know, there ended up being a pretty even mix over time of people who are Republicans and very conservative, and people who are Democrats. And, you know, we try to be what a college usually aspires to be, which is kind of an open marketplace for ideas. That has worked out really well at Damon. Now, obviously, you know, we wouldn't bring somebody on campus that was, I don't know, let's say, fomenting revolution and hate speech or something. I mean, we try to bring people in that have honest ideas and maybe honest disagreements with, you know, with other thinkers. And you know, we want to, you know, hear them out and give them a chance to be heard.
How do you, Gary, how do you deal with the what you see at other schools? Like, for example, it was announced this morning that students have filed a petition at Harvard to withdraw the degrees granted to a bunch of people that are tied to the Trump administration, for example, in one way, shape, or form, even a congressman that just happens to be a Republican. I mean, when you see this or you see the fact that students will shout down a speaker or drive them off campus or force speaker to be canceled, this whole cancel culture thing. Is that disturb you as a college president, or is it just something that you see as part of our culture today?
Well, yeah, I mean, that is something you're seeing in a lot of colleges. I mean, we have not had that at Damon. I mean, we have had people ask tough questions in the question and answer period of some of our speakers, and that's appropriate. We have not had any kind of, in recent times, protest or shouting down anybody or so on. And certainly, I mean, I wouldn't be in favor of canceling somebody just because of their belief. But, you know, you also have to be careful of who you bring on campus. And you have to wonder why some colleges were thinking about bringing so-and-so in the first place. And so, for example, I mean, even before this present sort of mess that we find ourselves in national politics, you know, you had on campuses around the college, around the nation, the question, well, how do you deal with, there's a few people that are Holocaust deniers. Do you really want to bring them to campus or not? Is that really a kind of position that deserves to be heard in the first place or not?
I think what John was referring to was the fact that I think everybody, you, anybody in a position like yours, has certainly the right to deny the extremes just because they happen to exist. At the same time, there is, I think, a great deal to be gained from students, from the community, by having a balance in terms of the thought patterns that are brought to a campus like yours.
Right, and that's why I'm very happy with how we've been able to navigate that. As I was saying a minute ago, I mean, when you count up the various speakers we had in the Distinguished Leaders lecture series, it comes down to about 50-50, and we had a number of these over 4 or 5 years. So we did a good job of we had Eric Cantor here when he was in office, and Wasserman Schultz when she was in office at the same time, and you know, it's that kind of balance that really worked out well for us. And as I say, we never had a problem with shouting down or any of that kind of thing.
And I think you should be commended for that, because it's I think the general impression is that college campuses have really become not fairer, I guess, in terms of the way they deal with differences of opinion. And I'm glad to hear that's not the case at Damon. So just very quickly, Gary, if you touch on a few things that are really important, I think, in terms of the impact of a college like Damon's, that impact on the community, the art, music, theater, the music fair that you, when will music fair return?
Well, musical fair has been doing a certain number of remote kinds of offerings. I do know that. Just so that people know, musical fair actually is not part of the college. We just host them on the college campus.
But it brings people on the campus, which is a good thing.
Yeah. And we have done for a long time. They're their own nonprofit organization, and you know, they've done a lot of I don't know, they must do 6-7 full musicals a year, maybe more. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, because of the pandemic, they haven't been able to do anything live. They've just done a few remote kinds of things. Now, what's in the works, you might have read in the newspaper, is Amherst supervisor Brian Culpa, who's been a great friend of the college and I think a great leader for Amherst in a real number of ways, has as one of his pet projects to really have a Amherst Center for the Arts. And I know he's planning a situation where musical fair and the Amherst Symphony and a few other of these arts organizations can all really, for the first time, have their own home.
Gary, I have to stop you there, unfortunately, because we're running out of time. But I want to thank you, Dr. Gary Olson, for joining me on the show today and for sharing your insights about the goings-on at Damon in light of everything that's going on around us. I want to welcome you back again sometime soon, I hope. And I want to thank our listeners for being with us today.